in the textbooks, it said that the byproducts of deuterium fusion would be enough neutrinos, tritium, and gamma rays to kill Fleischmann and Pons in their University of Utah lab. Since those two were alive and being interviewed on TV, the logic was they must be wrong about their experiment. Historically, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, led the academic assault against cold fusion. So it is perhaps ironic justice that this month, on June 11th to 12th, 2011, MIT provided facilities for the 2011 LANR/CF Colloquium. That stands for 2011 Lattice Assisted Nuclear Reaction / Cold Fusion, the newer, more politically acceptable name for cold fusion. Some two dozen researchers attended to discuss promising cold fusion experiments in Israel, Japan, Italy, and the United States now, not 22 years ago, now. Making the 2011 MIT colloquium possible is 56-year-old Peter Hagelstein, Ph.D., Associate Professor of Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences at MIT since 1986. In spite of persistent criticism of cold fusion experiments and difficulties in financing cold fusion research, Professor Hagelstein is convinced he has seen with his own eyes the energy results of electrochemical nuclear fusion and thinks cold fusion could yet be an important energy breakthrough in this 21st century that needs so much help. Here now is MIT Professor Peter Hagelstein.
The science that has been done within the community over the past 22 years, in my view, signifies very strongly that there is a real effect, that it can be understood, that it can be addressed experimentally, that it can be addressed theoretically as well. And a huge amount of progress has been made, which could provide some support, some scientific support, for the notion of the development of a technology that would be fundamental in addressing the energy problems that we're facing, addressing the climate change problems that we're facing, that would address the lack of availability of clean water throughout the world. There are a number of experiments out there which I think are candidates to be exactly that kind of experiment. In this day and age, people can do cold fusion experiments and see excess heat. For example, Mitchell Swartz pretty much claims these days that in the majority of his experiments, if his cathode's in good shape and if his connections are spot welded properly and they don't break or something, that pretty much every cell that he runs produces excess power, and he can get factors of 2 or 3 pretty much every single time that he does an experiment, and he's reported an ability to get factors of 10 excess power and a few observations of even higher levels of excess power. The SRI group had a great many observations in their earlier work where they would see excess powers in the range of 10-15% up to a factor of 100% excess power. There's a group that worked in Israel under the heading of Energetics Corporation, and they managed to get rather good reproducibility for basically 100% to 200% excess heat events while they were in Israel. There's a breaking wire experiment that was reported at the symposium that's been innovated at SRI, which one version of it that involves co-deposition of palladium on a palladium wire, running it in heavy water and pulsing it, that experiment appears to work every single time that it's performed when the loading's high enough. And that is a candidate for an experiment that could be replicated more widely among the scientific community. We know that it's a real effect because many of us have been involved in experiments where we've seen it with our own eyes and instruments. Those who've persisted have seen energy from these experiments, have seen an awful lot of energy coming from these experiments. So those that have worked the longest and the hardest on this problem will tell you from their own observations that the effect is completely real, and as such would provide the basis of an area of research. Sadly, because of events that took place in 1989, an effort was made to discredit the work Pons and Fleischmann reported and to discredit the work of folks that were doing research in the area. And those involved in discrediting the research were wildly successful.
Why was there such a concerted effort to discredit this major breakthrough in cold fusion?
A wonderful question. I don't actually know the answer. I do know pieces of the answer. In 1989, when the announcement was first made, it basically went against numerous textbooks on nuclear physics and condensed matter physics. And the basic issue is that there was no previous work that had been reported which was consistent with this announcement. For example, the production of nuclear energy is at this point well known and well understood. But the way it works is different than what was claimed by Fleischmann and Pons. For example, Fleischmann had conjectured that in some way deuterons were coming together and fusing in his cell. However, DD fusion had been studied in nuclear physics ever since the late 1930s or so. And people know that when deuteron fusion happens, that you get energetic reaction products. You get two pathways. You get a proton and a triton. You get a neutron and helium-3. And the two pathways, primary pathways, happen 50-50. So in association with fusion energy, deuteron-deuteron fusion energy, you'd expect roughly a little bit less than half of your energy to come out through the neutron plus helium-3 pathway. And the neutrons, there's a lot of neutrons, and they carry a lot of energy. So Fleischmann and Pons talk about nuclear fusion in their cell. If they produced watt levels of excess power, they would have been pretty badly posed by a flux of neutrons, which would have done them in. And given that they hadn't been done in, the physicists knew that they had not seen fusion of the kind that had been studied and was discussed in papers and textbooks. Everybody was uncertain as to whether Fleischmann and Pons were right or not, and given that they were claiming an effect that was, you know, fusion in a test tube, where fusion was known not to occur in a test tube, most physicists thought they were just wrong. You had chaos reigning. You had everybody trying experiments without enough information to do a confirmation experiment.
Well, Professor Hagelstein, if you and your younger colleagues have been able to demonstrate that the palladium and platinum in heavy water does produce energy, then why would there be any negative hangover from years ago in 1989 when Martin Fleischmann and Stan Pons were falsely criticized? And 21 years later, you and the colloquium are basically saying the idea has been vindicated. So why wouldn't that release resources in a country like the United States that needs an energy alternative to fossil fuels so badly?
A wonderful question. I do not know the answer to your question. I know bits and pieces of the answer to your question, but I don't know the answer in general. In order to get funding in this day and age, you need to basically have support of your fellow scientists. You send in a proposal, it goes out to get reviewed, and you need to make sure that in some way the people that review it know what you're working on and think highly of it and are willing to recommend that it be supported. That's not the case for work in the cold fusion business.